Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Game Industry News podcast, The Gin Lounge. Today we have Neil Syadovich here. Say hi, Neil.
Hi.
And I'm Wacky Jackie, the internet radio jockey. Today we're talking about modern game industry conventions and how they affect our interactions with the medium. So to start this off, I'm going to toss the ball over to Neil, because I think he has an axe he's been wanting to grind.
I have a few axes. In fact, I need to grind a few because my wall is nothing but axes. I brought up a couple of these in previous columns, and both Vincent and I, without giving out our ages, are old enough to remember the older era of gaming. A lot of the things that game companies are doing now just bother us. For me, the antithesis of everything that I love about gaming is NBA 2K21. And just to start with this one, for the first one is the forced online accessibility, where you always have to be online, whether or not you're playing online, whether or not you're playing with people. It's you have to be online, you have to be talking with people on a server, or else. NBA 2K21, I picked up on a Nintendo Switch. You know, a portable console. But while playing the game, if you put the Switch into standby, or it times out and goes to sleep, say you're in the restroom or making dinner, if you're in the middle of a game and it's paused, it'll boot you back to the menu and get rid of all of your data. And if you take it outside of internet connectivity, you can't play your game. Even if it's not online, even if it's just your single player story mode, the My Career or whatever it is. Again, on a mobile console, if you leave your home internet and want to play it in the car, you can't. And I know for a lot of console games, it's not as bad, because if you're on your PlayStation or you're on your Xbox, you're probably on the internet anyways. But to do it on a mobile console almost gave me an aneurysm.
Yeah, that is really unfortunate. And that's not even withstanding the fact that if you have just a console, PC, whatever, an always online requirement causes issues if for some reason or another the online service becomes unavailable. Like, my wife was having that same exact issue as what you'd have with, what was it, NBA 2K20? She was having that problem with Anno 1800 on PC, because Anno 1800 requires you to have a constant internet connection, but for some reason Uplay servers go down every so often.
It's just frustrating when, you know, I paid $65 for a game that took 6 hours to download. And it wouldn't be so frustrating if, you know, just being in the middle of a career mode, in the middle of a basketball game, have to pause to go, you know, make lunch and come back only to find out that it timed out. So, you know, I have to replay the whole game from the beginning. And I, speaking of downloading, and I know you've had this issue as well, where, and I'm going to conflate two issues here, because I know we both have had issues with this. The first is whenever we buy a game on disc. Back in the day, and I'm going to get my walker after saying this, back in the day, you bought a game on disc, you went home, you put the disc in the game system, it added a slot to your memory card, and then you played your game. That was all you had to do. Now, you buy a game on disc, and it still has to install like 40 gigabytes of the game in order to play it, and then that's not including whatever day one patches you have that could be anywhere from 5 to 15 to upwards of 25 gigs of day one stuff on top of what you just bought.
Yeah, and I have that exact same issue with a lot of these games. If I could be completely honest about something, last year I picked up a game called 13 Sentinels. It's like the latest game by VanillaWare, the guys who did like Dragon's Crown, Odin Sphere, those kind of games. I got home, I had a finite amount of time to play the game, popped it in the PS4, and it had to install. I completely forgot that installing was a thing that you had to do with the PS4. Because it's been a hot minute since I've played a game on my PS4. And I let it install, do its thing, come back. It has an update that it needs to download. And I don't know what it is about the PS4, but if you don't have a solid-state drive, it takes like a year and a half in order to download and then apply an update. So I let it do that while I went off to learn trigonometry. And I know I have the game. I just completely forgot about it because I had all of the... I had to do an install and patches. And I'm assuming by the time I go to play it again, there will be another patch on top of it that I will also have to download, apply, and then I'll completely forget about the game again. I was excited to play this at one point, though.
Yeah, and
do you have any situations like that?
I mean, like, I remember I picked up Far Cry 3 and 4 for the wife because she's never actually played a Far Cry game. And I...
Lucky her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Far Cry 3 is at least worth playing.
It is. I actually really liked that one. I was just being a jerk.
So you're being you.
Yes.
I popped the game in for, and like you mentioned, finite amount of time, late in the evening. I just wanted her to start play the game while I went off to do some homework. She sat down to play it, even though it was an old game, still had to install. And by the time it was done installing, she's like, okay, I want to play this, but I'm tired. It's 10:30 at night. I want to go to bed. She hasn't picked it up since.
Wasted money at Ubisoft.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I went and rebeat the game, so at least I got through it. But it's definitely something that's... We don't see it as much with the cartridge games on Switch. But it's just exhausting because I remember back in the day being able to just go grab a game for better or worse, or Castlevania 64, which is why did you spend your money on it? You could at least take it home. That moment, the only thing standing between you and playing your game was fighting it out of the package. If once you got done with that, the game was yours. You could play it as long as you wanted to. You didn't have to worry that... You didn't have to worry, well, if I get the game at 8 o'clock in the morning when the store's open, I should be able to play it by 11:30, and I have to work at noon.
I mean, that is... I guess that is aging us quite a good deal. Because we could also talk about reading the game's manual on the way home from the store.
Yep.
Or I guess later on in life, when they were still doing manuals, you read the manual while you're on the toilet or, you know, something of that nature. But I guess manuals aren't really things that a lot of games come with anymore.
Oh, yeah, because they do tutorials now.
I mean, they did tutorials back then, too. It was just a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
Like, I can praise Mega Man X all day, every day, for basically teaching you everything you needed to know about that game in the very first level. It's like, hey, you can kick off of walls to climb them. How do you do that? Fight this giant bee, everything will collapse, and the only way to get out of the hole is by climbing up it by kicking against the wall. You're completely safe, no enemies, teaches you exactly what you need to do. Sometimes things will fall, you're great, golden, jump and shoot. You know what to do. But yeah, I guess gaming was simpler back then, so when you only needed to know how to jump and shoot, it made a lot more sense to have simplistic tutorials and then fill up your manual with poorly translated story information. That was something that they loved doing back then.
Yeah, it was definitely a different era. And it's not the... We're not here to make the argument that the previous era was better with games. That's not the point we're trying to make. It's just trying to work with games with massive day one patches and buying the game and having to wait on it. And another thing in that same vein is having to have multiple accounts. Like, I'm tired of having to have an EA account, a Uplay account, an Epic account, a PlayStation account, an Xbox account, Nintendo account. Like, I just want to play the game I spent my money on. I don't want to give you my credit card information. I don't want your emails. I don't want a newsletter. I just want to play the damn game that I bought Like, is this so much to ask?
I guess I've been more used to playing with multiple accounts since I have a really big background of gaming on PC. And even if you were trying to do something as simple as play Unreal Tournament or something like that, if you wanted to join like the modding community, you'd still have to have like three separate accounts on three separate websites and remember whatever random passwords you wound up giving those. But I can kind of understand the frustration when you're like, oh, I bought this game from Steam, and now I need to sign into Uplay as well. And if I can't remember my Uplay password, I still can't access the game. But if I can't remember my Steam password, I still can't access the game.
Yeah, and for me, like, PC is one thing, but like the fact that it's bled over to console as bad as it has is where my issue lies. And I chronicled this earlier. My wife bought me Star Wars Squadrons. She knows how much I love Star Wars, Starfighters, and dogfights. So I opened up Squadrons, and then after a 2.5 hour game installation, even though I had the disc, see where we're going here, I get into the game, and I had no intention to play the online multiplayer. I don't even have a paid PlayStation account, to be honest. I don't like having to pay a monthly or yearly membership on top of the internet I'm already paying for. But I digress. So I just want to play the story mode and play against like the AI afterwards. But it would not let me into the game, a PlayStation 4 game, until I created an EA account. And at that point, like I kind of just lost my mind, because there was nothing in that let me know in giant letters or any major notice. Like, I can't think, I might have found it in a fine print where it said I had to have this just to play the game. Online multiplayer, I understand, because you have to log into the servers and everything like that. But to boot up this game, and if I was one of the people where I don't want to give you my personal information because it's EA, you guys are probably hacked fairly often, I essentially went, paid $50 for a game, brought it home to not be able to play it at all, to have to go resell it at half the price because I was not allowed to even boot your game up without having to have an EA account. And like that right there just bothered me for a PlayStation game. Like I feel that's going way too far.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I do want to preface one thing real quick with us complaining about the game installations on the PS4. I understand that because the PlayStation 4 uses a Blu-ray drive, installing something to the hard drive makes it much more convenient in bypassing egregious loading times. I understand that. Neil understands that. It's not that we're missing that portion of the, like, that piece of the pie there. We get it. It's just, it can be very inconvenient because, like, in my case, I just straight up forgot about a game that I wound up buying, I think, around Black Friday last year, simply because I don't get into my PS4 very often. And, like, obviously having multiple accounts can be quite annoying. Though, I do have one random thing I want to hit on, if we're going to talk about major gaming conventions that are quite bothersome in some fashion. If you knew this was going to come, microtransactions.
Loot boxes.
Loot boxes, recurrent user spending. What are all the names that they go by? Recurrent user spending. Oh, surprise mechanics. I think that's what someone said in front of Congress. They called them surprise mechanics, and it's like, come on. That's only going to fool, like, the extremely ignorant on the subject. But in any case, no matter what random name you want to use with it, it's peddling gambling to vulnerable populations and children. And I find it, by the very nature, inherently predatory. Because you're paying money for what's effectively nothing. Like, it doesn't cost a developer or publisher anything to allow you to earn better quality characters or items or mechanics. Like, obviously, games like FIFA make players want better characters, and everything in the game is designed to make you desire them, even if you're not as susceptible to this kind of surreptitious advertising as you might think you are. But they've determined that if they withhold the good characters and lock them behind what's effectively gambling, they can take something that was offered for free for 40 plus years, then sell it back to you at ridiculous price points through imagined scarcity that doesn't even exist because all the items are in infinite supply. This isn't an NFT or Bitcoin or whatever. It does not cost anything for you to be able to unlock the best players in FIFA rather than just rolling the dice and spending, you know, $2,100.
Yeah, and even off of, I don't even want to say it necessarily targets kids or, if you look at it at not even as gambling, you could also look at it as essentially setting up a pay to win and being using essentially people's competitive attitudes to milk more money out of them and just boost profits. Because could a Call of Duty player work really, really hard to get enough kills and battles and assists to get the better weapons? Sure, they could. Or if they can just pay that $50, then maybe, just maybe, they can get that new weapon that they don't have to unlock and actually do better at the game. And I think you're also more likely to see this for anyone who wants to play games professionally, go to professional esports tournaments, is they think they got to have the best gear to be able to get on a team, have access to get in these esports tournaments. And to do that, instead of putting in the hours, if they can, they just will shortcut it. And it's essentially triggering the part of people's brains where they're like, I know this is a bad idea. I shouldn't spend the $35 for what is essentially a piece of code to a game I already have. But if I spend that $35 and I get better and I get on an esports team, I could win thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars in an esports championship. And then because some people get a little too optimistic, they bet on themselves and they can't recoup the money because you can't like sell those goods when you're done. You can play with it until the servers go down.
Oh yeah, basically. And I do kind of think that there is a predatory element to it, because we even had cases where people were being paid to do virtual pack openings. Like you had streamers, YouTubers, or just whatever other influencers who are around were given like a large number of loot boxes of different varieties. Some of them even having greater than usual chance at good items than what your average plebeian could purchase. And a lot of it would go to show that the obscene spending isn't random happenstance. That's the purpose. Mm-hmm. They built it for that from the ground up in what's effectively virtual casinos. And in some cases, it's marketed to children. In other cases, it's marketed toward people who have addictive personalities. It's not that they want everyone to spend a lot. A few people spending a little and then one person making life-ruining decisions might just be the end goal. It lets them make a lot more money off of these than what they normally would be able to. And what's worse is sometimes the quality gap between the average items and the best items, characters, or what have you is gigantic by design. Recently, EA had an issue where employees were risking their damn jobs to sell FIFA icon cards, which really just goes to show how screwed up the game's economy is, when the best players would cost like $1,200 to $1,700 because people from EA themselves were selling them to other people and would sign into their EA accounts, their PSN IDs, and unlock these players for them. And somehow, people decided that that was reasonable. It's ridiculous. Which I don't know if you've heard about the EA Gate stuff, but that's essentially the cliff notes of it.
Yeah, I did. And it's, and sports has gotten bad about that. I've sat out sports games longer than I have, because I used to play Madden every year, NCAA football every year. And then I took some years off because I didn't have a console or a console that had one on it. And for the longest time, like whatever, like it was the Ultimate Team thing was just kind of like a little afterthought. But then it got to the point now where it's like, 60% of the game is like unlocking this ultimate team and different tiers of these characters to play online with people. And because let's be honest, like this loot box system essentially started with mobile games, which for mobile games, it makes sense because if you build this game and you put it out for free, you got to make money somehow. And people, a lot of people don't like spending money to buy mobile games up front. So, I mean, it take it for what it is. It still made a lot of sense. But essentially what they've discovered is games like Team Fortress, Overwatch, Anthem, games that are strictly multiplayer only, player versus player combat games, no or practically no storyline, but the whole point is to play multiplayer online. Essentially, what game companies have learned is these are literal pinatas of money, because
pretty much
they will make more money with Overwatch than if pretty much any other RPG game not named Final Fantasy VII. Like,
I mean, that's not really hard because RPGs don't tend to sell a lot.
Yeah,
they had a massive revenue from loot boxes in Overwatch.
And like even like, and shooting games have started to mimic that a little bit, because I remember Call of Duty Black Ops 4, pretty sure it was 4 I went to, actually covered the event for Jin, and I later found out that it pretty much had no storyline, because Call of Duty decided they wanted to become PUBG and Fortnite, because that's where all the money was at. So,
I mean, I would say that they've been doing a lot more than doing a little bit of that. Like, remember Star Wars Battlefront 2?
Yeah.
Before it's, I think it had a complete redesign later, but back when it first launched, people estimated that it was going to take 4,500 hours of gameplay or $2,100 to unlock all of the base game content when that originally came out.
Yep.
Like, that's a massive investment in time. And the weirdest part is that it's not just marketed toward competitive players. Like, that's the easiest thing to go for when trying to make an example of something. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it can just come from wanting to be the best in your friend group. Like, you have Little Billy Badass, who's a big fish in a little pond, and he just wants the biggest edge he can get over his friends. Like, mm-hmm. I actually have a friend who cannot participate in any game with loot box structures built into it. Like, Borderlands 3 is as far as I can get him into anything, and that's because it doesn't have like loot boxes. Like, you can buy skins or whatever, but there's no loot box mechanic, because he found himself spending large amounts of money on, I think it was Fortnite loot boxes, but not for the regular multiplayer. Like, it was originally supposed to be like a tower defense, and that was the mode he really played, but just large amounts of money going into this. And he didn't even realize it until he looked at his bank statement one time and went, I've spent entirely too much in this free-to-play game. I need to stop. Made the decision to cut himself off from that. And, you know, luckily for him, he had the fortitude to be able to stop himself, and also the bank account to handle taking all of those little hits.
Mm-hmm.
But how many other people aren't that, I want to say fortunate, but how many people aren't in that situation? And these mechanics just effectively prey upon them. You know?
or it also depends on your friend group too, because if you have the type of friend group where it's an arms race, then you're not going to break the chain, because then you always got to be competing. You always got to keep buying more stuff to be better than them. And these are things that we didn't have to deal with growing up. It was like,
well, we did. It was just in different ways.
Right.
We played Magic the Gathering. That's where it was for us. But at least we got to keep our cards afterwards.
Yeah, because we still have cards from when we started playing, and even a little bit beforehand. But I mean, like, video games, like, I'm going to use the game Vigilante 8 as an example. For anyone listening to this podcast old enough to remember Vigilante 8, I am dating us horribly, and I am sorry, Vince. But there were two secret cars that you could have that were really good, not game breaking, but really good. And you could unlock them by beating the game with every character. So you put in those hours and you got rewarded, but you didn't have to, go buy the content to be able to unlock it in your game. And even similar to what we dealt with also was cheat codes, where you could go find cheat codes to unlock things, more money, flying cars, whatever it was that suited you at that point. But you didn't have to pay $3.99 for a cheat code to unlock flying cars in Grand Theft Auto. You just found either, if it was on the internet, or you found whatever issue of Game Informer had Vice City cheat codes in it, and you put in the cheat codes and flew your cars around and getting into trouble. That's how we did it. But now we deal with loot boxes, having to either put in an ungodly amount of hours or pay a large sum to unlock game content, or they just flat out withhold the game content and sell it to us as DLC, extra content, bonus chapters. Now, we didn't have to worry about DLC when we were playing games. I mean, sure, there might have been expansions, but most of the time, the expansions were just add-ons to the game or an extra game. You didn't feel like the expansion was part of the game you originally paid for, but it was purposely held out.
Yeah, that's a pretty major one. There have been so many complaints about that over the last probably 10 years that it would be hard to total them all up. And actually, I can very easily pivot from that to another thing that I'd like to talk about. How familiar with you with video game development roadmaps are you?
Describe it a little more. I'll jump in once I remember what we're talking about.
Okay. So the video game development roadmap is basically, here's a game. We know it's not great upon release, but we're going to go ahead and treat this at the norm. You'll get in on the ground floor, and then later we might finish the game.
No, like No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky, Anthem, Fallout 76. Anthem's probably the premier poster child of, we had a neat concept, but we didn't give the game enough time in the oven. So they shipped out a game with like severe flaws, devoid of content, lay out a roadmap to fix all the bugs and add the aforementioned content, and then just abandon the game while only doing half of what would be considered the bare minimum.
Yeah, Fallout 76 had a bad rollout too.
Oh yeah, it did. From completely game-breaking glitches, like everyone can launch the nukes multiple times a second, so it crashes for an entire day and nobody can play. That was pretty impressive, in all honesty.
And for people like us, I mean, it was a little bit sad because you and I are both from the Midwest. We've both been through West Virginia. We know that for a Fallout game, there was a lot of potential there to make one really interesting, and then to we didn't expect it to be great. We didn't expect it to beat Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas. But to come out as bad as it did and to come out as an MMO of all things, it's just like, really? This is the best you could come up with when you had like a giant countryside to work with and you could have had fun with. This is the best you guys could come up with. And you couldn't even roll that out right.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably talk about Fallout 76 for a while because with all of our connections in West Virginia, we know a lot of people who picked up the game right on launch. Though, I have quite a good number of friends who say that the game has improved, but none of them really came back to the game once they rolled out Fallout First, which was their, like, year-long subscription service. I think it cost $100 a year. Once that came out, they just stopped.
Hey, they're like, there we go. Subscription services!
Yeah, there.
Do you remember when gaming used to be simple?
I mean, if you're not paying for a subscription service, are you really involved with the game at all? Ha 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 ha. It's another form of recurrent user spending that it can be done well in some circumstances, but for the most part, a lot of it's superfluous and just another way of squeezing money out of the consumer at the end of the line. I can't even name any particular one that I actually pay for outside of, like, I guess I pay for PSN, I pay for Nintendo Switch Online, and I think I have an active subscription with Pokemon Home. Those are those are the three I currently have running. I don't think I do any others.
Yeah, and I do appreciate how Microsoft and Sony, like, are they're doing the, if you pay for our PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live, you know, they offer one or two games every month that you could download and play as part of your charge. Like, that's nice. I appreciate it. I don't engage in any spending outside of the game I bought, because and it, for me, it's idealism, but I am firmly of the mindset. I paid $50, $60, whatever for this game. I'm not paying you anymore. And if it's to the point where I feel a game is completely hindered and they released DLC that felt like the back half of the game, unless it's a game series that I have bought for years and years, I may not buy it again. And what I mean by that is I feel like Pokemon Sword and Shield did that. Now, I've bought Pokemon games for a long time. The majority of them have been great. Sword and Shield was kind of an anomaly. I'll give them a pass. But, like, after, like, I as much of a Star Wars fan as I am, I don't know if I want to buy another Star Wars game that's new. I say new because there's a rumor that Republic Commando is coming to the Switch, and I love Republic Commando, but that's an older game. But if Star Wars Battlefront 3 comes out, I don't know if I want to buy it after finding out, like, all the microtransactions and things like that. I know they since fixed it, but what's to stop them from doing it again to a lesser extent? Or what I dealt with Squadrons, which is, yeah, you can get a couple extra items, but there's all microtransactions if you want. All these paint jobs, all these, you unlock all these weapons to actually have a fighting chance in a dogfight, because they just give you bare armaments, so you can't actually do well against people who have better armor and things like that. So I am firmly of the belief that if you didn't put it in the game and you want to charge me extra, you're not getting extra money out of me, because it's people who pay that extra money that makes them go, oh, we can just keep doing this then.
I feel like that's correct to an extent, but for the most part, it's now become so normalized that there's not really, abstaining from it isn't going to make it go away now. Like, with microtransactions, we can always go back and blame, was it Oblivion's horse armor, or was it Skyrim that introduced the horse armor DLC? I don't remember which, but sometimes people go back and blame the original concept of just wasteful DLC for why we have microtransactions and things like that now, for them to try and recoup more money out of the consumer at the end. They may have a point, they may not. I honestly do not know. But when it comes to paying for online on console, I think that's just the way that it's going to be from now on. I pay for PSN, PlayStation Plus, because I wanted to play Monster Hunter online. That's pretty much it. Like, if it wasn't for Monster Hunter, I probably wouldn't partake of that at all. But then for Switch Online, I bought it entirely for Generations Ultimate. Then I get to partake every so often of playing online with Sword and Shield. And then Rise is coming out. I'm going to be playing that one online too. I don't particularly know that just, if everyone stopped paying for it at the same time, then maybe something would happen. I have no confidence in us being able to change anything individually any longer, because they're going to do absolutely everything they can to get more and more money out of us as mm-hmm. they go along. Even if it comes to the point of, like, shipping completely broken games than trying to fix them on release, which we could talk about patch culture now. We can pivot right into patch culture.
Yep. And
how
also,
many times have, oh, go ahead.
Also, see our podcast on Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, Cyberpunk 2077 is a, I don't want to say poster child again, but it would have to be more than a poster child. It's the billboard with neon lights for just how terrible patch culture is in trying to get things over on the consumer. Because you can get a game completely broken on release, and it'll get fixed later with patches, maybe. the whole culture around Patch is why I only pre-order games from specific developers that I have the utmost confidence in. So, like, I've never had a broken Monster Hunter game on release, so I'm picking up Monster Hunter Rise when it comes out. If Monster Hunter Rise is absolute garbage on release, I will probably never pre-order a Monster Hunter game again. That's just live, learn, and then get loves, I guess. But, like, I've never had a mainline Mario game that was like Sonic 2006. That's just never happened.
I will say, for Cyberpunk 2077, normally CD Projekt Red isn't known for putting out broken games.
They do.
They do?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Not to the extent of 2077, but, like, Witcher 3 came out. It wasn't in absolutely atrocious shape, but it wasn't wonderful. I mean, bugs and glitches abound. They even started lampshading some of the problems that they were having with pathing for Roach, because he would just sometimes get stuck on top of houses and stuff. So they made a Gwent card about that. But they were like, they were happy, fun glitches, not hateful, oh, hey, your save file's completely broken, and an NPC is just following you forever now, randomly out of the blue. And it wasn't like Bloodstained Ritual of the Night on Switch bad either. That was probably, I think Bloodstained was the last time I pre-ordered a non, well, I don't even think I pre-ordered that one. I got it on release day, I think is what that one was. But that was the last time I got a non, like, Monster Hunter related game on launch. And that was probably one of the worst cases I've ever had of the old switcheroo, because I read the reviews and everyone was praising the game, saying, oh, it has performance issues here or there. I'm like, okay, cool. Good to know. I'm going to get this game whenever it comes out on the Switch. And the Switch release day was pushed back a week than the Xbox and PS4 and PC releases. And I didn't think anything of it. I pick up the game, and it is broken beyond repair. Some areas had dips in frames all the way down into the teens. If more than one enemy was on screen at a time, you'd have like a half second of input delay, which I thought was really messed up for an offline single player game. It's not like you're playing Smash Ultimate Online. This is a single player Metroidvania. You can at least make the controls feel good, right?
Right.
But what really killed that version of the game for me was when I got a crash while accessing a bookcase. And then I restarted, made my way all the way back, ignored the bookcase, and then the damn game froze while I was saving. Which, FYI, that can corrupt your save file. So, you know, good old Castlevania Igarashi bringing the most intentional and difficulty mechanics. I dropped the game right then. I didn't come back to it for over a year, because that's how long it took for them to fix up the Switch version to even a remote level of reasonable accessibility.
Last Remnant was pretty broken when it came out.
It wasn't great, no.
Both of us had catastrophic failures with ours.
Well, yeah, my Xbox red-ringed while playing that game, though I don't think that was the Last Remnant's fault.
Mine, I don't know what the hell happened with it, but it just suddenly, like, there's an issue where, like, I don't know what happened, but, like, there's these, like, black lines that would, and like what looked like a little bit of binary code was like overlaying the screen as I was trying to play.
Yeah, the one where like it didn't load in the textures, so it just loaded in random colors.
Yeah.
I think I saw that glitch too.
Yeah, that game was a busted mess.
Yeah, and I wound up dropping it because I couldn't complete all the side quests, because that was back during the time where I was like, I have to finish absolutely everything in an RPG I enjoy. And it wouldn't let me finish one of the side quests. So I'm like, nah. I don't know. There's so many games that have been shipping broken on launch. I think we'd run out of time if we tried listing them all. Because like for every single Cyberpunk 2077, there's a Fallout 76 or a WWE 2K20 behind it.
Yeah.
For some reason, actually finishing the game and making a product that's worthwhile isn't high on a publisher's list of priorities. Mm-hmm. For some reason or another. It's like they're always more than happy to sell buggy, broken games, because what else are you going to do? Are you just not going to play Marvel's Avengers? Ooh.
Which, I feel like if, and this is a bit of a digression, I feel like if you buy a movie tie-in game and you complain that the game is not good, someone just needs to pop out with, like, confetti, jazz hands with a hat that says "no duh" across it. Because for the most part, movie tie-in games, especially comic book movie tie-in games, have been horrible.
I don't think Marvel's Avengers was specifically a movie tie-in game. I'm talking about the one that came out like within the last year.
Yeah, and I not necessarily a tie-in, but it was capitalizing on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I mean, like, even most X-Men games. Like, I remember with Jen, I remember this clear as day. I was playing with a buddy in Indiana. I got sent an X-Men game. I think it's like Legends, I think it's called. Like, it's not even produced anymore because of a copyright issue. But this was an Xbox 360 game where it was like you are a player. You could choose like one of three different powers and level up. And it was like a hack and slash. It was so bad. The graphics were early to mid PS2. And this was mid to late 360. And
that sounds unfortunate.
Yeah, because it's just almost every comic game. Like, the only game I could think of that would be like comic-esque that you could enjoy would be like Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom if you're a fighter. Like, but like Captain America games aren't really good. Thor games aren't good. So
there was one good Spider-Man game in, yes, like the PS2 era, because it actually let you swing around on the buildings. Obviously, the Spider-Man game that came out on the PS4 is substantially better, but that was probably the first time I had played a licensed comic book style game and wasn't left wanting to vomit in my mouth afterwards. And mind you, I received Superman 64 as a Christmas gift one year, and I spent like an entire day trying to fly through all of those rings while Superman controlled like a cow with a propeller attached to him. Oh, and you clear stage one, and it's like, stop the cars from crashing into each other. And you look around and you don't see any cars because the draw distance of the N64 was basically non-existent.
I feel like saying a cow with a propeller on it is being too nice. It's like a cow with a propeller who's been pumped full of nothing but Jack Daniels and has also been given a brain-damaging concussion.
I mean, if you gave me Jack Daniels, I might actually try playing that game again and might enjoy myself.
Well, there we go. We have our next Let's Play. We're going to get Superman 64. I'm coming over to your location. We are drinking Jack Daniels, and we are playing Superman 64.
Maybe with any luck, I'll get to the place where you can run around the city. I guess they just didn't expect anyone to get that far in the game, because they didn't even give the walls collision. Like, you could just run through the buildings as if they weren't there. And inside the buildings is just big black emptiness, which was my heart after playing Superman 64.
So games have been simpler back in the day, some of the earlier issues that we've been talking about were exhibited to, but not nearly to the level that we see nowadays. One game I mentioned earlier that strikes me was Castlevania 64, of all things. So Castlevania 64, you started out, you could play one of two people. Reinhardt, who is a typical Castlevania protagonist, man, Sacred Whip, the usual, and a magic user named Carrie. However, like a year-ish later, year and a half-ish later, they came out with Castlevania 64, I think it was Lords of Shadow or something like that, where you could play as Reinhardt or Carrie, or Cornell, who was a male magic user who could turn into a werewolf, and Henry, who was a kid in the first game, he walked around with knight armor on his upper half, no armor on his lower half, forever, whatever sense that makes, and he used a gun. So it's just like, were you guys trying to fix the original game? And there's a couple of different levels. Like, were you trying to fix the game? Was this the game that was supposed to come out? Like, what is happening here and why is it happening?
I'll be the first to admit that while I am a massive Castlevania fan, I only rented Castlevania 64, and all I remember was running around as, I think, a little girl.
Carrie.
Fighting a skeleton, a big skeleton boy, in a forest, and I remember there being a lot of white because of the N64's aforementioned draw distance problem.
So there's Let's Play 2. I'm going to come over to your place with some Jack Daniels, and you're playing Castlevania 64.
I will eat the cartridge. I will not subject myself to that again.
As long as
that that game caused me to completely check out of any 3D Castlevania. It was by sheer luck that I wound up catching Lament of Innocence and playing it.
If you're going thankfully, to get the
that was a good deals later. What?
If you want to at least eat the cartridge, do it on camera so we can at least let the audience see.
No. If I'm going to take this pain on my own and suffer in silence. Although I'll probably suffer in noise several hours afterwards, but that's going to be something just between the two of us.
We should probably wrap up because the viewers have places to be.
Do they, though? Do they? There's a pandemic going on. What else does anyone really have to do at this point? I guess if you're an essential worker, Godspeed. Thank you for hanging in there. I don't know. Things suck. This is probably the most negative I've been in any of these podcasts so far. I try to be the happy boy with good things to say.
Normally, I'm the glass of vinegar, but it's, and again, and it's not the, I guess our final point is we're not saying games are bad, game industry is gone, everything's horrible. We're not saying that. It's, Vincent and I were talking about this a while ago, and we had those moments of reflection of when we played games growing up, just how simpler things were, and just how things were maybe, I guess, I don't want to say pure, but it was less complex of you take money, you buy a game, you take game home, you pop game in system, you play a game. The longest it took you to get into a game was as long as it took your system to boot up. Or if you had a PlayStation or an N64, possibly having to pull the cartridge out or the disc out and blow on it or wipe it off and put it back in.
Man, but I think the largest issue now is that I've reached an age where if I can't sit down and play the game immediately, I forget I bought the game. That's actually kind of a big problem. And I've been reflecting on that ever since I said it, because I think that says a lot about me as a person. So, we're going to have to play, an object permanence game with me. you hold up a sheet, and we'll see if I can figure out where you've gone afterwards.
and we'll try it with and without the Jack Daniels. We're getting mileage out of that Jack Daniels.
That sounds like a good time to me.
Right. But I would rather go back to the days of having to have a couple of different memory cards than having to keep buying a whole bunch of external hard drives because of how big the games are getting. Where I, with my buddy's 360, I was borrowing it before he moved on to a different job. I got Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare, just because I wanted all my Xbox games I had, because my 360 had long since died. The newest game I had was from 2007.
Wait, Advanced Warfare was on the 360?
Yes. And I can't tell you how it looked, because I tried to load it onto the 360 and it needed I think it needed 60% of the total hard drive space for the one game.
Space was an issue during that generation, because I think the PS3 was the only one that had a reasonable amount of storage right out of the box. Like, the Wii didn't even come with a hard drive, essentially. It's like, oh, hey, expand this with an SD card. And that's all you had. So you'd have, like, five SD cards hanging around.
Not like those could get lost or anything.
Yeah, it's like on... And because you'd have your Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, My Life as a Dark Lord SD card. And then you'd have another one with Mega Man 9 and 10 on it. And then you have another one that you can't read the label anymore because a dog chewed on it. You're not sure what's on there, but it'll probably still work. You know, the storage was an issue because they were trying to figure out what they were wanting to do back then. I guess storage still is a problem because it's like, oh, hey, throw even larger and larger hard drives into your system. But I haven't particularly had that problem this generation. Though I just have like the basic 1 terabyte PS4 hard drive that I haven't really touched because, like I mentioned before, I don't play a lot on my PS4.
Yeah, and it's it's funny in a sad kind of way because, like, the common sense logic is, well, if I want to save memory for the games I have to buy digitally, so if I buy the disc, I won't have to install it. I'll play it off the disc, and it'll save memory. But then it still makes you install the game onto your hard drive, so you're not actually saving any memory or anything. You're just having an extra disc to roll around with just in case, I don't know, your internet connection stops or something. Unless you have NBA, and then in that case, you're just screwed.
Actually, that is one problem that I've been having with the Switch, now that you bring that up. Well, now that I've had an opportunity to think, I guess. Is like one of the Atelier games. They had the Japanese language patch you could install on your Switch. It takes up like 6 gigs or something. But when the internal flash memory of the Switch is only 30 some gigabytes, that's a pretty sizable chunk. And for some reason, your save file gets tied with that DLC. So you can't delete just the Japanese voiceovers, even if you're not using them in the save file at that time. Like, if you switch back to English, you still can't get rid of it. It's tied to your save file. So deleting the DLC deletes your save file too. So the good news is, I'm never going to play Atelier, Leedy, and Soul ever again. That's what I'm saying.
Or you could take this as an opportunity to learn Japanese. It is a pandemic.
There's no way an Atelier game is going to help me learn Japanese. That's not even going to happen.
Well, if you drink enough Jack Daniels, you'll think you can speak Japanese.
Ooh, that's true. We'll have to figure that out whenever we finally do that.
For anyone wondering, no, Jack Daniels is not sponsoring this podcast. We're just drunks.
Very good thing you threw that in there. We're lushes.
We're not alcoholics. We're ethanol deficient.
I don't know where to go from that, so you may as well just go to the outro.
Yep, that makes sense. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know. We're always happy to hear what you guys are thinking of the show, what you guys want us to talk about. We are posting these shows on almost every available podcasting platform, as well as YouTube. Don't forget to check out Vince's Save State column and my Skirmisher column on Game Industry News at GameIndustry.com. And we will see you next time. So have a good night, everyone.
Catch you here next time on Dragon Ball Z.